Good afternoon from USC's Annenberg Media Center, and welcome to From Where We Are from Annenberg Radio News. For Thursday, March 1st, 2018, I'm Nadia Caldwell. But first, a news update with Leslie Umbreeze.
This coming Sunday marks the 90th Academy Awards at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. Looming large will be several major issues, from the Me Too movement to gun control. Late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel is hosting this year. The normal outspoken comedian has promised to stay away from controversial topics. But USC professor and entertainment journalist Mary Murphy says she doesn't think Kimmel will keep his word. And she predicts that women will speak up when presenting at the award show.
The one thing we know is if Frances McDormand wins, she will not avoid the Me Too movement. Mm. She will speak up. And it's likely that she will win for Best Actress. And I'm sure some of the women will say something.
This year's nominees are more diverse than in past years, but the National Hispanic Media Coalition says it's not enough. NHMC's Cruz Castillo says the lack of Latino representation in Hollywood is alarming.
One out of four movie tickets, or like 25% of the people going to these movies, and we're not even anywhere close, remotely close, to seeing ourselves represented up there. And that's just not getting actors and writers and directors. That's like just basic stories. Nothing is reflective of our culture, except for like Coco, and that's been a huge success.
Meanwhile, preparations outside the Dolby Theater are well underway, and the red carpet actors, producers, and directors will walk down. The runway has already been rolled out. The Oscars air this Sunday, March 4th. Another fierce storm is threatening to dump masses of rain and snow on Southern California tonight and tomorrow. That brings with it renewed risk of flooding in areas affected by the destructive fires in the fall. Just a month after the fatal mudslides in Santa Barbara, officials are ordering residents there to evacuate their homes again. Here's Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown speaking on the potential damage the coming storm may bring.
This is a challenging storm. This storm is traveling down the coast of California. It has gone through Monterey County and is now starting to hit San Luis Obispo County. And because of its direction and trajectory, it is impossible for the Weather Service to predict exactly where it is going to hit and exactly where the most intensely hit portion of our area will be.
Sheriff Brown says officials started knocking on doors at noon today to make sure people were prepared to leave by the 6 p.m. deadline tonight. An estimated 20 and 30,000 people will be affected by the evacuations. The storm is expected to hit between 2 a.m. and 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. Hundreds of protesters showed up yesterday to a Disney union's meeting in Anaheim to demand a livable wage. The protest came after a recent study from Occidental College and the Economic Roundtable showed that 1 in 10 Disneyland workers have experienced homelessness. It also showed that 2/3 of employees don't have enough food to eat 3 meals a day. Disney officials called the study inaccurate and unscientific and reported the average salary at the park last year for full-time hourly employees as $34,000. Disney officials went on to correct that number, saying it was actually $37,000. Tonight, we'll see lows around 50 with 20-mile-an-hour winds. Rain is expected to start around midnight. Tomorrow, the highs are in the mid-50s with rain through the evening. Clouds and a chance of rain will stick around Saturday until we see sunny skies and highs in the 60s on Sunday. Right now, it is 59 degrees outside the Media Center at USC. Fifty years ago today, a group of Mexican-American students walked out of Wilson High School to protest unequal treatment based on racial prejudice. Thousands from schools across East LA joined them in solidarity. What became known as the blowouts were the largest Chicano youth movement ever to hit Los Angeles. Today and tomorrow, events at Cal State Los Angeles commemorate the boycotts. Amid a new wave of student activism, Renny Svernovsky looks at how the blowouts are being remembered 50 years on.
In 1968, 22,000 students from East LA High School staged 2 weeks of demonstrations against a school system they said had failed them. Luis Garza is the co-founder of La Raza, an East Side newspaper and a voice for the Chicano rights movement, which covered the student walkout.
In protest against conditions and curriculum and lack of representation within the textbooks and within the staffs that were teaching.
The students used their own underground newspapers, their version of social media, to spread word to other high schools, and they called upon a long history of huelgas, Mexican labor strikes, as inspiration. Garza is co-curator of an exhibition showing at the Autry Museum about Larraza's legacy in photographs.
I feel it's very positive that people are looking back at that period of time and acknowledging the importance and the significance that took place.
The walkouts won some concessions from the school district, including smaller class sizes and bilingual teachers. Garza says the school system has improved since then, but that many of the issues Mexican Americans faced at the time still ring true today. Chris Kelly, an educator in Boyle Heights, agrees.
A lot of the issues about the walkouts were around education, whereas they're clearly inner city schools have a lot of problems. They're not so, it's not exactly the same problems that they were protesting 50 years ago.
Instead, she says the students she works with today are concerned about families being torn apart by immigration policies, being able to go to college protected by their DACA status, women's issues, and
people bringing guns to school, just like anyone else.
In the coming weeks, thousands of students are expected to turn out at gun reform rallies across the country. Several protests are planned for the month anniversary of the shooting of a Florida high school that left 17 dead. The events are part of an appeal to conservative lawmakers and organized almost entirely by student activists. In the meantime, the next few days are all about commemorating the 1968 blowouts, with hundreds of students busing to Cal State Los Angeles' campus for a walk-in tomorrow. For Annenberg Media, I'm Renny Svernovsky.
Social media app Snapchat made some big changes to the way their app looks, but that's not the only thing they're changing. Last week, the social media company put more than half of its Venice space up for lease. After 6 years, the company will move towards consolidating hundreds of employees into a corporate office near Santa Monica Airport. It's the latest challenge to the company, which has faced several problems in recent years, from criticism by celebrity users like Kylie Jenner to accusations that its offices were driving up rents for local residents in Venice. The social media universe is also getting a little more competitive with the launch of a new social media platform last night. Camila Rios has more on what sets it apart.
The social media app Vero is the latest online platform to capture the attention of users worldwide. Now that it's number one in the Apple App Store with over 1 million people signed up, many are starting to wonder if the popularity of Vero is fleeting or if Vero is here to stay. I took to the campus center of USC to find out just how popular Vero really is among college students.
Do you guys know what Vero is?
No.
Although there is no doubting the buzz that Vero has created online, it seems the average social media user still hasn't caught on.
Do you guys know what Vero is?
Not really. I've heard it's a new social media or social networking kind of site or app.
I've never heard of it.
Much of Vero's buzz has centered around its pros and cons. People appreciate the app's simple algorithm and the chronological display of posts. This does not come as a surprise considering the outrage that sparked after Instagram changed their feed algorithm from a chronological one to one based on engagement.
So frustrating. Yeah, you end up liking someone's post from like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. That's
it's
true.
Very frustrating.
I mean, it doesn't bother me as much. Like, at first it bothered me a little bit, but I think it's just a learning curve.
But the big draw to the app is its promise to be ad-free. However, although Vero is currently free to download, it will eventually charge a subscription fee in order to stay ad-free. I asked students if they would be willing to pay such a fee for the service.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say no as well.
And I don't think I would spend it on social media, because I know social media, like Facebook and Instagram, affects you negatively psychologically, so I feel like spending money to further that habit would be counterintuitive to me.
Users have also reported technical difficulties when using the app. These difficulties, along with a future subscription fee, means that Vero will have to overcome a lot of skepticism in order to earn its place next to our current beloved social media platforms. For Annenberg Media, I am Camila Rios.
President Donald Trump announced today he wants to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum coming into the U.S. The proposed 25% steel tariff and 10% aluminum tariff will apply to all countries. But some economists predict that it will hurt states like California, which have high concentrations of consumer industries that rely on those materials, including the oil and gas sector. Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah said President Trump's tariffs would be a huge job-killing tax hike for consumers. Other Republican senators say the tariffs may open up room for other countries to retaliate. By the close of trading today, the Dow dropped by 400 points. It's 10 minutes after the hour. I'm Leslie Ambrose.
Thanks, Leslie. Coming up on From Where We Are, UCLA released a study on the stagnant economic progress in the South Los Angeles area over the past 50 years. In fact, in some ways, the area is declining. Jeffrey Dubroff has more on these findings later in the show. Underground gay dance clubs in Russia, the men's rights movement, police killings of unarmed black men. What do these disparate things have in common? Award-winning journalist Jeff Charlotte has covered them all. Writing for Harper's, The New York Times Magazine, and GQ, Match Volume producer Thomas Carroll started out the conversation asking him to describe the central story of a book Charlotte has just finished.
Really, just one big story, but it's at the heart of the book that I've just finished. A story about a police killing, an LAPD killing of an unarmed black homeless man named Charlie Kunang, known in the street as Africa and Skid Row in 2015. And I got interested when a colleague of mine wrote a short essay about media coverage of Black Lives Matter and noting how much of the media would look at this as more as just Black death matters. We never really learned about the lives that were lost, what was lost to us. And I decided I'd seen this video of his killing, bystander video that popped up on Facebook hours after it happened. And I was intrigued also by the fact that, unlike so many of those cases, Eric Garner is a family man and Michael Brown is a promising young recent high school grad and Tamir Rice is a boy. Charlie was homeless. He had once been a bank robber, which the LAPD made sure that everyone knew. He was an addict. And there was a way in which a lot of the press just skimmed right by that, as if that meant that his life did not matter. So I came out here to Skid Row hoping to reconstruct as much as I could of his life. There wasn't much of a documentary trail, but I thought I might sort of find an archive of the street by talking to the people who knew him and ended up also reporting about Skid Row and policing more broadly through that life.
I think one of the most interesting points that you raise in one of the essays that you wrote for GQ around Africa's killing, the gentleman that originally called 911 because of the altercation, you had mentioned that he was never interviewed during the stand-ups that night. Is that correct?
Yeah, LaRue J. Curls. Yeah, he was Africa's friend, and they'd gotten in a very minor scuffle, and he had called 911, which is not entirely uncommon on Skid Row. They don't have a lot of sort of ways in which to sort of exercise power. So he called 911, not expecting anything to happen, just to get Charlie's tent hassled. The police would come and tell Charlie to take his tent down. And so the police came and did what they did. And he was there. He's there on the body cam video, which was leaked to me. The police would later sort of say, and then remember, there's a victim here and so on. He's not a victim. He didn't understand himself as a victim. There was so much misrepresentation. And then right down to the fact that there he was, just there afterwards, and no interview. And so he disappeared. We never really heard his story. It took me a long time to find him and a couple trips out to L.A. To find him working with a lot of local people, a lot of Skid Row residents. And I don't mean mission workers or God help me, cops. I mean homeless people, houseless people on Skid Row who are invested in that story being told. And they finally found LaRue when I was able to talk to him understand that he, at that moment, he had been afraid that he was going to be shot. He didn't understand what was going on. He was suffering from serious mental health issues.
In one sentence, what's the one piece of advice you give budding journalists?
Oh, I don't think I have a one piece of advice. A weird sort of optimism. I think this is actually a golden age of journalism. It's not a golden age of making a stable living as a journalist, but it is a golden age of reinventing forms, finding new ways to tell stories, finding friends that you want to work with. It's a little bit like the 1930s in that sense, in which, you know, there's this great experimentation and and overflow. So now is the time to rush forward toward uncertainty.
Jeff Charlotte, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Charlotte in conversation with Match Volume producer Thomas Carroll. If you've ever taken the bus in Los Angeles, you might notice that the routes around South LA are busier than most. That's in part because of economic factors. According to a new UCLA study, Annenberg Media's Jeff Dubroff takes us to the streets of Los Angeles to find out more.
The study conducted at the UCLA Luskin School of Public Affairs found that there has been little to no economic growth in South LA in half a century. One result: South LA residents are twice as likely not to own a car and three times as likely to use public transportation.
Prices of owning cars is pretty expensive, and it is pretty difficult keeping up with the payments.
That was Los Angeles native Henry Hicks. Hicks, a forklift operator at a warehouse, was waiting for the bus to go to work. He says that his salary just isn't enough to support a comfortable life.
It's hard to keep up with technology and trying to do payments on the home and your car. So I would say yes, it's pretty expensive living in LA.
And owning a car is the least of some residents' worries. Ruben Ramirez moved to South Los Angeles 6 months ago. He says it's been hard to find a job, and without work, he's unable to afford a place to live. USC professor Matthew Kahn says there are a number of factors that have resulted in the lack of economic growth in South LA.
This is a part of town where many people do not have college degrees. Home prices are rising, and at the same time, labor market opportunities for those who don't have a college degree have gotten worse.
The UCLA study concludes that one possible outcome is that the area is now more vulnerable to gentrification. That concerns some residents, like Melanie Morentes, a student at Santa Monica College. She says she can barely make rent because the prices are too high.
Maybe having more affordable housing for people. Not everyone can afford those condos. Not everyone's going to live in downtown LA. So they also need to take in consideration LA is not just downtown. It's not just these like tourist spots.
And the lack of economic growth also means some residents say they're struggling to put food on the table for their families. David Page, another South Los Angeles resident, says there's a lack of empathy for people in his situation.
You see the homelessness and families, everybody trying to scramble just to feed their families.
And he says the city could do more to help.
You know, a lot of areas they don't even pay attention to. It's just there's no apartments, there's no homes for people.
And he says the city could do more to help.
There's a lot of people out here that really do need the help that don't. They're not getting the help. There's nowhere for them to go to get help.
USC professor Matthew Kahn says USC also has a part to play in the local neighborhood.
USC can help to address the challenges the middle class we face if the NERD faculty make the case for improving public schools and reducing traffic congestion, and if our young star students stand out as role models as we raise the aspirations of those who live in disadvantaged communities, that they're not stuck there.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Jeffrey Dubroff.
Los Angeles has a reputation as something of a vegan's paradise. There are dozens of restaurants serving nothing but animal-free food. But for residents in parts of South LA, finding a store that sells tofu and leafy greens can be almost impossible. Annenberg Media's Alexandria Mason went out, shopping list in hand, to find out how hard it can be to go vegan grocery shopping in a food desert.
I'm vegan! Step one to becoming vegan is the most crucial, and that is to only eat lettuce.
That's a skit by YouTube personality Supreme Banana.
Unless you are eating grass.
She's poking fun at the stereotypes of veganism.
I wonder if this is organic.
When you think of veganism, you may think of stores like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, foods like kale, maybe just the color green. But what do you envision when you hear the words food desert?
It's really crazy to me how you can drive like 10 minutes away and there's nowhere to get fresh food, but there's an overabundance of fresh food in California and in Los Angeles because California grows like 70% of America's fresh food.
That's Olympia Ossett, a vegan entrepreneur that's working to increase access to fresh produce in food deserts like Inglewood, where she used to live. A food desert is an area where the nearest grocery store is more than a mile away. And Aset says living in one made buying everything on her vegan grocery list no easy task.
And it was really, really difficult for me to get the food that I needed. I would usually be on the bus about like 2 hours every time I need to get fresh food. And it just really sucked.
I wanted to get an idea of what living on a plant-based diet in a food desert is like. So I hit the streets of Inglewood with my vegan grocery list just to see how difficult it really was.
Excuse me. Do you know where the closest grocery store is? No?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
No, sorry. I honestly do not.
Just asked three people where the closest grocery store was and no one knew. So now I'm using Google Maps. I just found a grocery store called Stone's Grocery and Market.
My list includes berries, leafy greens, tofu and other meat alternatives, quinoa, and vegan pre-made meals.
They have some produce, no leafy greens. There's canned veggies. So yeah, this is more so like a mini mart, and it had, as far as the things we're looking for specifically on the list, they did not have. So now we're going to go to the next place, which I believe is Ralph's.
This Ralph's is 2 miles away from where we just ended, 2.3 miles.
Ralph's is a popular supermarket chain in Southern California.
Okay, now I am at Ralph's in the Ladera Center. Do y'all have tofu?
Yes, but on the very other side of the store with the dairy.
Okay. This is nice. They have a little vegan vegetarian section. It's pretty small, but at least it's labeled vegan and vegetarian. Vegan hummus, vegan hot dogs. Ralph's had everything on our list.
Then I was back on the bus, traveling another 4 miles to get to the next grocery store, Food for Less.
Okay, I'm in Food for Less, and this is another big chain grocery store that is known for having cheaper food. Yeah, I see some berries, so we got berries off the list. We got leafy greens.
I did not find their tofu, but I did stumble across their meat alternative section. It was about half a column in their frozen food section. Again, still small. If I would have blinked, I probably would have missed it.
Looks like things we couldn't find here from Food for Less were tofu.
If you're not used to grocery shopping with the vegan list, it may sound like, for the most part, I got everything I needed in my scavenger hunt. But keep in mind, these are pretty basic essentials. In comparison to the variety of vegan products offered in Trader Joe's or Whole Foods, you see it's not as simple as just a few items or a small section. 365 days in that small section with those same fruits and veggies year-round can get old really quick. Here's all set again.
I think that it's also important to note that of those grocery stores that exist, none of them are like organic grocery stores, you know what I mean? Like maybe they have an organic section or something like that, but none of them are what you expect when you're on the west side of town. And so there's absolutely no reason why organic quality food shouldn't be available everywhere.
Of course, there are other issues outside of just getting near a grocery store. Low-income and communities of color are the most limited in getting access to fresh food by both distance and costs of a green diet. Finding the items on your grocery list is just one snapshot of living vegan in a food desert. For Annenberg Media, I'm Alexandria Mason.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Jasmine Stanberry Lane with today's Root Source.
On today's Root Source, we'll take a look at the word oxymoron. The word derived from the Greek word oxymoron, and it's a compound of oxy and moron, oxy meaning sharp and moron meaning foolish, together, keenly stupid. In English, it's used to describe phrases when two words that appear contradictory are put together, like I see hot, living dead, love hate, same difference, and unbiased opinion. The word has been used in the English language since 1657 and is now more commonly used than ever before. What is Katy Perry actually trying to say? Are you hot or cold? Is the answer yes or no? Who knows? Maybe it is keenly stupid after all. For Annenberg Media, I'm Jasmine Stanberry Lane.
You don't have to look beyond LA's street names to know it possesses a rich Spanish and Mexican history. Today on Street Smarts, Kaylee Wells takes a look at LA's oldest street, Olvera.
In a city as congested as Los Angeles, it's hard to imagine a street you can't drive on. But in the middle of downtown, a brick path lined with restaurants and vendors is worn not by tires, but the footfalls of tourists. 3 years ago, the American Planning Association named Olvera Street one of the top five great streets of the United States. The street has had a long and winding history and was almost destroyed. Let's rewind almost 200 years to the 1820s. Mexico has just won its independence, and the Pueblo of Los Angeles is expanding, building new streets and adobe buildings. At the site of what is now Los Angeles Plaza Park is a bustling culture center, and jutting off from that plaza is a little alley called Wine Street. 50 years later, that little alley was renamed Olvera Street after the county's first Superior Court judge. Fast forward another 50 years to the 1920s, and the city has gone from a population of hundreds to near a million residents. And more people are flocking to Los Angeles every year. Between 1900 and 1910, the city's population tripled. In fact, in 1926, the city even planned to demolish the Avila Adobe on Olvera Street, the oldest building in Los Angeles still standing. But local residents fought back and worked to restore the building, and the street started just 2 years later. By 1929, the street was closed to traffic, and by Easter of 1930, Olvera Street opened to the public to serve as a tribute to LA's roots. Nowadays, its dozens of restaurants and shops attract 2 million visitors every year to explore the culture that birthed the City of Angels. With Street Smarts, I'm Kaylee Wells. Fine may be fine, but for mine I
want to feel... Los Angeles is known worldwide as the capital of the freeway. But in recent years, the city has moved away from building new roads and focused instead on investigating in public transit, bike lanes, and traffic calming measures. The Los Angeles Metropolitan Transit Authority met today to vote on the expansion of the 710 freeway. Christine De Leon reports.
The 710 freeway connects the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach to East LA. It's an extremely busy route and one that has caused local communities and transport planners something of a headache for years. At today's LA County Metro meeting, the board of directors voted on a plan that could see the freeway widened to accommodate more traffic. But the idea of expanding the road, known for years as a diesel death zone, has caused concern among local residents, with some questioning whether adding an extra lane would even reduce congestion.
It's tiresome to hear that we've been in this battle for 15 years. We really need you to do better. Please vote no on 5C.
That was Alicia Morales, an organizer with Long Beach Residents Empowered. Among those in support of the plan were union laborers, truck drivers, and workers from the port, including Alex LaFarga with Laborers Local 1309.
This provides good jobs for our laborers, for our tradesmen. It provides a future where you just don't survive, you can thrive. Okay.
For several hours, the meeting heard from those both for and against the freeway widening. In the end, they opted to vote in favor of a modified version of the motion, which requires other road improvements to be made in the area first, and for a second vote to be made by the board before any widening is approved. The additional work includes changes to freeway on and off ramps and intersections. All that means is that it could be more than a decade before a future Metro board votes on adding an extra lane. For Annenberg Media, I'm Christine De Leon.
Authorities today found a 30-year-old hiker who was believed to be lost for at least a day in a mountain above Altadena. The man was heard yelling for help by some horseback riders on the Cheney Trail yesterday night. Deputy Trina Schrader of the Sheriff's Information Bureau said crews could hear the man, but it was so faint they could barely tell what direction he was on the hillside. With the support of two helicopters and the mountain rescue team, rescuers found the man in an area without any hiking trails. The man was airlifted to a local hospital where he was treated for minor injuries and exposure to the elements. That's it from where we are today. Today's show was produced by Kaylee Wells. Our associate producer is Alexandra Mason. Chris Profet is our board operator. The theme music was composed by Derek Renfro. Subscribe to From Where We Are on iTunes and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Annenberg Media. I'm Nadia Caldwell.
And I'm Leslie Ambrose. Thanks for tuning in and have a great evening.